to STEM Patal.
Woo! We're back.
We're back and we're ready. I'm Emlyn Gremlin.
I'm Emma Dilemma. And this is your Women in Science History podcast.
So how are we going to start today, Emma? what are we doing?
So I have a couple questions to warm Emlyn up before I get into my story today.
Okay.
Okay, let's start with one. Emlyn, you went to Columbia University for undergrad. Is that correct?
It is.
Okay.
And I feel like they're going to wish they had not let me in.
No, you're an amazing student. Don't.
Okay, continue.
Okay, can you name any PhDs or famous people from Columbia?
Just any famous people.
Any famous people that went to Columbia.
Barack Obama.
No way.
Yes.
Okay, this isn't about Barack Obama.
It's all about Barack Obama. Besides our best and greatest president. All the people that did atomic bomb, all at Columbia.
No way. Uh-huh. Wow, I'm learning. Nope, not them either.
Nope, okay.
Taking too long. Spit it out. Who is it?
Okay. Frasier.
Kelsey Grammer?
No, he didn't. Oh. I couldn't think of anybody.
Wait, did Frasier in Cheers / Frasier, of Cheers Frasier fame,
yes,
did
that
he
one.
Go to Columbia
no.
in the show? Okay.
Oh, I mean, I have no idea. Oh. Wasn't he in Seattle?
Yes, but then he moved to Boston.
You Doesn't have really watched matter. This more
I
recently
like
than
Frasier I. And Cheers.
Okay.
Anyway. They're both bad and really good.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you another hint.
Okay. I don't think it's going to help, but I like it.
It probably won't. This cool. person was born in Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Why would that help me?
Okay, there's also another famous person.
Marie Antoinette.
No!
I don't know.
Is she even American?
No.
Okay.
I think she's
French.
Yes. Hot Springs.
Another president is from Hot Springs. This still isn't a president, obviously, because we have had
Barack Obama.
No, not Barack.
Michelle
Hawaii.
Obama.
Michelle Obama has not been our president.
Has this person that we're going to talk about been our president?
No, I just said that. I'm just saying there's a president from there.
Okay. Was the president from there also related to the person who was born there?
No.
Okay, so those clues are not at all helpful.
Yeah, I'm giving context for Hot Springs. Okay, are you ready?
I'm so ready. Yeah, please take me out of my misery.
Okay. So the female scientist I'm going to be telling you about today is Mamie Phipps Clark.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of her?
Mamie.
M-A-M-I-E.
No.
Yeah.
I had not
heard her name before either, though I had heard of her studies before.
Okay.
In, like, intro psych and maybe even in history classes.
Okay, I took none of those, so maybe that explains.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, I had not heard her name before.
Oh, and even in those, yeah.
Okay. Mamie Phipps, at the time, was born in Hot Springs, Arkansas in 1917.
Okay.
So, right in the middle of World War I.
Good timing.
We've already established that you don't know of Hot Springs, because I was going to ask you if you've ever been to Hot Springs.
I've been to a Hot Springs.
This is capital H, capital S.
No, okay. No, I have not.
So, I actually went there 2 years ago.
Are there hot springs?
Yeah.
Okay.
On my way to do field work in Tennessee. So, like, if you go north from here, like, a little northeast,
uh-huh.
you kind of go straight there.
Okay. Did you take a dip?
I didn't take a dip.
Oh.
I just stopped in for lunch.
Oh,
okay. And I toured. Okay, let me tell you about hot springs.
Okay, tell me.
Because it's a really interesting town. Kind of a weird little resort town in the middle of Arkansas. It's really pretty. It's right outside of the Ouachita National Forest, which That's spelled O-U-C-H-I-T-A. And when I looked up how to pronounce it online, all of the tapes were in a Southern accent. So they were all like, Washita. so I think that's how you pronounce it, but I'm not certain.
So there's a non-silent W.
Right.
A non-there, non-silent
like
W.
If I read it, I would say like, Uchita or like, yeah. Washita. But okay. Everyone says it Washita.
All right.
On the internet.
I'll believe it.
Okay. So let's see. From Wikipedia, the center of Hot Springs is the oldest federal reserve in the United States, today preserved as Hot Springs National Park. Okay. And these are like, and the national park is actually right in on Main Street.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a really weird little town. The hot spring water has been popularly believed for centuries to possess medicinal properties and was a subject of legend among several Native American tribes. Following federal protection in 1832, the city developed into a successful spa town, incorporated, this is still from Wikipedia, and then I'll read in my normal.
Okay.
Incorporated January 10th, 1851, the city has been home to Major League Baseball spring training, illegal gambling,
nice.
Speakeasies, gangsters, there's a racetrack, there's been like casinos. And from my own experience, the main street in town has a row of these like huge, beautiful bathhouses.
Ooh.
Not the Dan Savage bathhouses.
What are the Dan Savage bathhouses?
Never mind.
Like okay. Sexy bathhouses?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
They're just like spas, basically.
Okay. That are no fed. Funny business.
No.
Okay.
Well, maybe. But
they're not for that.
No. They're fed by the spring water, so you can actually, like, bathe in this. They're
nice.
Really beautiful, like, covered in tile, and all this, like, historic, like, these really pretty awnings, like, almost, like, French style or Italian.
Oh.
Yeah. It's
okay.
A really
yeah.
weird place. Okay.
It seems like our podcast, so, a second name for our podcast is Women Who Live Near Spa
Strange
Town.
Yeah. I know,
or
right?
Like,
women who live near places people want to go to bathe in the waters. But it instills something magical in them.
Yeah,
I think.
Clearly.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, people would come there to bathe in the warm hot spring water. And, okay, you ready to hear who's from there besides Mamie Phipps Clark?
Yes.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah. Okay.
When you drive into town, there's this...
Oh, I should have known, because I know he's from Arkansas.
Yeah,
with his Southern drawl.
A painted sign that says, Welcome to Hot Springs, and on that sign is Bill Clinton's face, painted...
It's weird.
...somewhat well, but as well as you could for
yeah.
a sign.
Okay.
Anyway, I think they should replace his face with Mamie's, because she's cooler.
It's a controversial statement.
I love... Well, Bill Clinton's all right, but
we're not going to go.
Okay. So Mamie was born in Hot Springs. I'm just setting the scene for where she grew up. In 1917, the middle of World War I, her father was a physician who also worked in some resorts in town, and her mother was a housewife. And despite growing up in this really tumultuous time in history, Mamie describes her childhood as, overall, very happy, saying that the Depression seemed to strengthen family ties rather than destroy them.
Wow.
Right? So she grew up in World War I, then the Roaring Twenties, and then the Depressing Thirties. Yeah.
I have a question that's probably going to make a fool out of you and me. 1917, were we... World War I was happening. Were we... Like, what were we in it at that point?
It ended in 1919.
Yeah.
So I would sort of assume yes.
Okay.
Because I think by the time they actually say it's a war, it means, like, most of the major powers were
okay.
in it.
Because I know World War II, we were pretty late to
yeah.
the game, but I don't know, I don't remember about World War I.
Yeah, we weren't as in World War I as involved.
This is just, this can go to our oops collection. Yeah. Let us know if that's wrong. Okay,
keep going. We're a biologist. Let's remind everybody.
Not historians.
Oh, God. Okay. So, yeah, she grew up during this, like, kind of the highs and lows of the 20s and 30s, right? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, she remembers the Depression as a really difficult time where her family had to cut back on a lot of things, but she also remembers enjoying her life, like school. She really loved school. She loved, like, hanging out with her friends. She loved her family. She loved traveling. Okay. However, the schools in Hot Springs, Arkansas, at that time were segregated.
Okay.
So there was one K through 12 school for all of the white children on one side of town.
Okay.
And one K through 12 school for all of the black children on the other side of town.
Okay.
Yeah. And while this didn't discourage Mamie's love of school, and I guess, I don't think I said this yet, Mamie is African American.
Okay, I was about to ask.
Yeah. Okay. While this didn't discourage her love of school, she remembers feeling uneasy just mm-hmm. walking through life. Like, yeah. not being able to go into certain stores and not being able to go into certain restaurants or buildings or events, etc. Even though Hot Springs, I guess, was relatively liberal for a southern town.
Uh-huh.
Because it was a resort town. So
there's lots of people coming in.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they relied heavily on outsiders and northerners mm-hmm. to come to,
yeah.
to their town. Okay. So, yeah. So she says there are occasional lynch mobs and KKK riots in town.
Yeah.
Not as much as other southern towns.
I mean, any is no good.
No. Yeah. But she also has said that, most people in town typically denounce these very covert, violent, racist acts.
Uh-huh.
But she thinks it's because people's income in Hot Springs depended on tourism.
Gotcha.
And there was still, overt is the right word, not covert. Overt is, aware. Anyway.
Wait, what's the sentence? What's the context?
Let me say it again.
Okay.
Okay.
Paint a word picture.
She says that most of the white people in town at the time typically denounce these very overt, violent, okay. racist acts. But she thinks it's because most people's income in Hot Springs depend on tourism to okay. the bathhouses.
So covert, different story.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So people were still racist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. In 1934, at the age of 16, she moved to Washington, D.C. to start college at Howard University.
Okay.
And so her family was pretty well off.
Mm-hmm.
Since her dad was a physician, he was able to afford to help her go to college, but okay. she also got a scholarship.
Nice.
And she was interested in majoring in math. She loved math. But found her math classes at Howard to be much more challenging than her high school math classes in Arkansas.
I mean, don't we all, once we
yeah,
go to college?
Yeah, right? I think that's just the college experience sometimes.
Do you have any sense of, how... I would imagine... So, Howard University is a primarily...
Yeah, it's a
historically black college. But I don't know... I would imagine the amount of women...
Yeah.
That were there was probably pretty low at that time.
Yeah. I mean, she's very revolutionary in many ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll see that. But yeah, it was, I don't know actually the ratio mm-hmm. of sexes, but I know that it wasn't easy for her to get into college
yeah.
or
okay.
anything. Yeah. Nothing came easy to her, just even though her dad, was better off than a lot of people then.
Yeah.
I don't know. So yeah, she had a hard time with her math classes. She felt like a lot of other students at Howard had much better math educations than she felt she had had, and essentially felt like they spoke a different language almost when she got there. So she was interested in working with children and considering switching majors. And in her second year, she met an older student, a senior, sexy senior, Kenneth Clark. you know, sorry, last name. Anyway, same last name. Anyway, never
which
mind.
Is
cut this out.
Oh wait, wait. What's her full name?
Mimi Phipps Clark.
Oh, yeah, foreshadowing. Yeah. Or they're related, but probably.
Oh
not.
God, no. Okay. Okay,
I wasn't sure what you meant.
No.
Okay. Cool.
Okay, she met an older student, Kenneth Clark, who was studying psychology. And he reinforced her growing interest in working with children and in the social sciences. And they started to date, and eventually she switched majors.
Okay.
Which is only a cute story because they stayed together their whole lives.
Yeah. Like, oh, you shouldn't. Don't do math. Just work with children.
I would, like, advise any woman not to ever let a man come into such majors.
Unless she, like, that's what she really wanted to do.
Right,
and
yeah.
She just, yeah.
And it does seem like she was leaning that way, uh-huh. And maybe he was just helping her.
Yeah.
But it's, and she's influenced him similarly, like,
yeah.
Later on in their careers, but.
Yeah.
So early on in their relationship, don't change for a man, ladies. Okay. But honestly, this made her career.
Yeah,
so
probably a good move.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so she switches majors. Kenneth graduates and starts his PhD at Columbia.
Hey!
Columbia. Okay. While Mamie is finishing up her undergrad.
Roar, lion, roar. That's all I know of our motto.
University of Rochester, ours was Meliora.
It's just Latin.
Yeah, for, like...
Better? No.
Make better? Something like that? Do better? Yeah. Be better?
Be better.
Anyway, lame. Okay. She's still finishing up. In her senior year, he comes back. I mean, they're talking every day. They're
mm-hmm.
still together. In her senior year, they elope.
Oh.
And spend a nice weekend in Fredericksburg, Virginia, for their honeymoon. Okay. He goes back to Columbia. They're... talking every day. They're in love. It's great.
Yeah. I like
okay.
it.
The summer between undergrad and starting her master's degree at Howard, so she was going to continue on
okay,
at Howard.
Okay, she's going to stay at Howard.
Yeah. She says was one of the most magnificent learning experiences of her life because she stayed in D.C. that summer and says by sheer accident that she got a job in the office of Charles Houston, who was dean of Howard Law School at the time.
Oh, okay.
And he was an incredible lawyer that worked his whole life to dismantle Jim Crow laws.
Nice.
And mentored a ton of amazing lawyers that went on to work for the NAACP, like Thurgood Marshall, his
okay.
own sons. Yeah. So she met all of these really amazing lawyers working in this office.
Do you know what like when was this the 40s
this
or
was 1938.
Okay.
Yeah, so almost.
So before World War II.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Right towards the end of the Depression.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which honestly, so I've read like interviews with her and stuff and she doesn't really talk about World War II at all.
Okay.
Like, honestly, her focus was on segregation
mm-hmm.
and, like, solving those problems,
okay.
which makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was a kind of a war going on here.
I know.
So.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
So she met all these great lawyers, and this was the first time she really saw that she could actually do something tangible to fight against segregation. So she started her master's degree at Howard and became interested, still studying psychology, and she became interested in a series of studies by Ruth and Jean Horowitz on self-identification in nursery school children and considered how she might merge her interests in race and segregation with studying children and their psychology.
Okay.
So she... designed a study to see whether African-American children under the age of 5 could recognize their own race. And she had them, she studied this by having children age 3 to 5 look at drawings that were exactly the same except for the skin color of the drawings and had them point to the drawing that looked most like themselves.
Okay.
And it was they were given, like, a drawing, a sketch of, like, a black boy and a sketch of a white boy.
Okay.
And these
which one they most identified with?
Yeah, she would ask, like, which one looks like you,
yeah,
basically. Okay. And she found that with age, kids were more likely to point at the drawing depicting their own race.
Mm-hmm.
So, basically, her master's thesis was just looking at age at which you can identify things about yourself.
Okay.
But her husband, Kenneth, was fascinated by her findings and wanted to further study them with her. So he's getting his PhD at Columbia in psychology. And he's like, wow, Mamie, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Let's, like, do more with this.
Okay.
And so they developed a joint proposal and submitted it to the Julius Rosenwald Fund to design newer tests and continue that research on identity and race. They were awarded the fellowship, and, yeah, just after Mamie graduated in 1939, and then she moved to New York and started her PhD at Columbia.
Gotcha.
While he was finishing up. And this is interesting. She chose an advisor, Henry Garrett, who believed segregation was great. He was white.
Okay.
And thought it was necessary because black people were inferior.
Were there not that many choices? Did she pick him because she wanted, I'm going to change his mind?
She wanted a challenge.
Okay. Bold move.
Yeah. Crazy, right?
I'm trying to imagine, feeling that different than my advisor. Well, one, if your advisor thinks segregation is good and he's a white man and you're a black woman, that's very personal disagreement.
The first black woman in that department, and her husband was the first black man in that department.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So I'm sure they faced their fair share of discrimination, and people said shitty things to them all the time. But she also chose him because she still was interested in math, and he was a statistician.
Okay.
And she wanted to use more statistics in her PhD.
So, she was like, I want that racist statistician. Yeah,
I want the racist statistician. It's super interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so for her dissertation, she did a statistical study on the development of mental abilities, looking at IQs of children across age groups and whether or not if they had a high IQ when they were younger, did they have a high IQ later in life. And at the same time, she was working with Kenneth to develop the tests that they had designed in their proposal.
Okay.
These studies were completed by 1943, which is the same year that Mamie graduated from Columbia with her PhD. First African-American woman to graduate with a psychology degree from Columbia.
Nice.
Yeah. So one of these tests you might have heard of before. It's called the Dolls.
I probably haven't.
It's called the Dolls test.
Okay.
It's pretty famous.
Sounds creepy.
Yeah. It kind of is creepy, only because dolls are creepy.
Yeah, dolls are inherently creepy.
So in this test, African-American children ages 3 through 7 were presented with 4 dolls that were identical except for skin and hair color.
Okay.
2 of the dolls had brown skin and black hair, and 2 of the dolls have white skin and yellow hair. And to assess racial preference, so they were trying to study whether or not these children identified with their own race, and then whether African-American children preferred to be white or black.
Okay.
Pretty, deep cut. Yeah.
Yeah. So what was the difference between, so there's 2, black dolls with black hair, 2 white dolls with blonde hair. What were the different, was there differences between the dolls that were both black and the dolls that were both white?
I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Actually, that's a good question.
It seems strange to just have two of the same.
Maybe their expressions or something.
Yeah. Oops.
Or maybe a boy and a girl.
Okay. It could be a boy and a girl. Yeah.
Okay. That's weird. It doesn't say. Anyway, I could have looked up the actual paper.
No.
Okay.
We're busy people.
To assess So they were presented with the four dolls, and then the experimenter said these statements. Give me the doll that you like to play with or like best. Give me the doll that is a nice doll. Give me the doll that looks bad. Give me the doll that is a nice color, etc. And, like, give me the doll that looks like you. So you've never learned about this before? Or you're not sure?
I'm not sure.
Okay. I had learned about this before, and I don't know if it was psych or history.
Yeah.
Which, well, okay, anyway. So they tested over 250 children.
What, do you know what ages?
3 through 7.
3 through 7. So they weren't looking at white children, they were just looking at black children.
Yeah, so half of them were in segregated schools in the South, in Arkansas. And the other half of them were in racially mixed schools in the Northeast, in Massachusetts.
Okay.
So I think it was Kenneth went to all the Southern schools, and Mamie did all the testing in Massachusetts, because he had graduated by then. They found that by age 7, 87% of the children correctly self-identified.
Okay.
They also found that the majority of children chose the white doll as the doll they wanted to play with.
Okay.
But this is in both segregated and mixed schools.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so, and it sort of similarly follows with the rest of all these depressing statements that they gave the children. So, it's... interesting because while these findings were similar for children in the segregated schools and the mixed schools, the Clarks reported that many of the Southern children appeared to have internalized a passive resigned acceptance of their inferior racial status, while children in the racially mixed schools seemed more aware of the injustice of discrimination and were more actively upset by it.
Gotcha.
But that wasn't what their study was measuring at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think that those are just observations that they made in the paper.
Okay.
So, which is interesting because this study is going to go on to, like, change everything. But the study itself doesn't show anything about segregation in schools impacting the way that children feel about themselves. Except they're, like, observations that were on the side.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah, okay. So the study, it doesn't have data about how the segregated schools make children feel, but their kind of conclusions do have that.
Yes.
Okay.
So that's interesting for other reasons we'll get to later. So going back a little bit to 1943, so they published this study between 43 and 47 in a series of studies that show the same thing. So Mamie, though, graduated in 1943 while these were coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And they both graduated from Columbia. Kenneth is working as a teacher at City College in New York City. Mamie tries out a few different jobs around the city before landing in a psychologist position at Riverdale Children's Association, which was a home for homeless children, basically.
Okay.
Yeah. And she was really happy there because she could work directly with children.
Yeah.
So she couldn't get faculty jobs.
No,
because she was a black woman.
Yeah.
In the 40s.
Yeah.
So it was really hard for her for a couple of years to find a job that she really liked and was...
she's probably overqualified for most of the things.
Yeah, exactly. So she realized while she was there that there weren't enough avenues for children at the time to access mental health help if they needed it.
Okay.
And so she began researching ways to open up her own facility.
Oh.
In 1946, so 3 years after she got her PhD, she's born in 1917. She's what, 30 now?
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's right.
That sounds
okay.
That's
she opens a place in Harlem that's still open today called the Northside Center for Child Development.
Okay.
One of her initial projects was to administer intelligence tests to children in the community who had been labeled mentally disabled. when it turns out most of these children were just African American and had not been taught to read or do math properly. But the school systems were kicking them out
because
they were labeling them as mentally challenged. So
the schools are failing them and then blaming them for their failure.
And she was like, no, these students are really smart and incapable, and the school systems are failing them.
Yeah.
And she actually made these school practices illegal as a result of her testing.
Oh, so you couldn't kick out students who you thought were...
Yeah.
Like, too low of intelligence or mentally disabled.
So, pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So, all this is going on... She's, like, starting this center that's amazing while her studies are getting published. Let's see. And, yeah, a couple of years later, it was one of the first agencies to provide comprehensive psychological services to the poor Black community in New York City. And a couple of years later, they started providing not only psychological help, but a number of educational programs for children and their parents.
Very cool.
Okay. At the same time as she's opening the center, the NAACP is involved in a number of lawsuits across the South trying to get schools to be desegregated.
Yeah.
Because school segregation was still legal in 17 states in the 40s. Around 1953, the NAACP finally combines a lot of these cases they've been fighting for like 10 years into one huge case and brings it before the Supreme Court in the Brown versus Board of Education landmark case.
Okay.
At the insistence of Thurgood Marshall, who she met that summer, Mamie and Kenneth had testified over the years in a number of the smaller cases, like the state cases, and provided written testimony that was presented to the Supreme Court case, citing their studies and evidence that segregated schools were psychologically damaging to Black children. Though they sort of hadn't found that. But they had observed it.
They'd observed it, but they hadn't been collecting data on it specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, and Mamie in an interview said the only reason she thinks they asked her to testify was because at one of these... at one of the cases, her really racist advisor was testifying on the inferiority of Black people. And they were like, she's a student. We want her to testify to make him seem less reputable.
Yeah.
Because she was a student.
Yeah.
So that kind of worked out, like being his student.
Yeah, that's true. Like, why would you take me if you felt that I was inferior.
Yeah, she just, it doesn't make any sense. Above it all, yeah, basically.
That's cool.
Yeah, and okay, in 19 and there. That's all very complicated. All of that legal stuff. So this is just a very brief recounting of it.
This is not a legal podcast.
No,
we are even less qualified.
But in 1954, the Supreme Court voted unanimously that segregation was unconstitutional because it was inherently unequal.
Mm-hmm.
And in that decision, Chief Justice Earl Warren specifically cited Clark's research.
Okay.
And he said in a footnote, to separate from others of similar age and qualifications solely because of their race generates a feeling of inferiority as to their status in the community that may affect their hearts and minds in a way unlikely to ever be undone. So it had an impact on him. And the other justices. Okay. Since then, this doll study has been repeated again and again. And it's clear now that segregation was never on its own what led to the inferiority complex in Black children.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is obvious from their data. That was a problem in all of the children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a societal thing.
Right. Like,
even north.
Institutionalized racism was the problem. And unconscious biases obviously exist throughout our fine country, not just in the South.
No.
Okay. However, like, it was, even though the doll study itself, and even the Clarks recognize that now that it wasn't, like, totally a complete study, and they never really even meant it to be, they, I don't know, it was just a any science, it's like a preliminary study, or...
Yeah, you need multiple.
Yeah, you have to, like, do things again and again and again and again. Anyway. Either way, the Supreme Court decision was a victory, and their research impacted that decision and was the first ever psych study to be included in a Supreme Court case. And it's kind of even just a side note in Mamie Clark's whole career. Like, to her, it seems like a side note that their studies, like,
were used for Brown versus Board.
Yeah. Who was really focused on her career as a developmental psychologist, philanthropist, civil rights activist, and educator. And she served as the executive director of the Northside Center until retiring in 1980, and helped her husband start a multitude of educational programs throughout New York City. And she died in 1983 at the age of 65.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And there's a lot about her career as the director of the Northside Center, but she basically stopped doing as much science
because
she couldn't
get a job.
But in 1973, she was awarded the American Association of University Women Achievement Award for admirable service to the field of mental health. And 10 years later, the National Coalition of 100 Black Women awarded her the Candace Award for humanitarianism.
Yeah, it seems like she made the best out of not being able to get a professor job and made some real difference.
And she's, like, such a positive person and doesn't even think, I don't know, reading interviews with her about her, it didn't seem like she felt ever like she was held back, even though she probably was in so many ways, just by who she was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's Mamie Clark.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
She's such a cool lady.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome.
My sources were an interview with Mamie Clark by Ed Edwin from 1976, an encyclopedia.com article, a feministvoices.com article by Excel Carrera, and an article from theroot.com by Janae Desmond Harris called The Doll Test for Racial Self-Hate, Did It Ever Make Sense?
Great. Awesome.
Yeah.
I love it.
Cool.
Are we going to, is it work, work, work time? Work. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to talk about some research that's current, that's being done by some badass female scientists.
Yes.
And I've got two for us today. I was going to try to, say that this would give us useful advice for our podcast, but I just... Well, no, the second one might give us useful advice for our podcast.
We'll all have to give advice.
No, I mean...
But we're still in the early stages, so we probably need it.
We need a lot of advice. This, or the second one will might help us stay clean, if that's a thing that we're worried about.
Always.
Okay. So the first one came out this week in Biogeosciences, which is definitely it's all out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
So.
That's the point.
Yeah.
We're learning new things.
We are. And we're trying to explain them and we'll see how that goes. Okay. So tell me about sea ice.
Sea ice?
Yeah. What do you know about sea ice?
I don't see any ice right now. Boom. No. I don't know. It's ice on top of the sea.
Okay. Like, so you know sea ice is in decline.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's all I meant.
Okay.
Sorry, that was a leading question. Okay, so we hear about sea ice melting all the time, and we know that as sea ice melts, that's causing sea level rise. People are starting to try to do research on how other aspects of sea ice melting, how that could impact, like, ecosystems in the Arctic.
Wow.
Because the example that you probably think of is, you know, you have less sea ice, polar bears use ice in order to get food, so they're not getting as much food, so they're not doing so well. But what we do know is a lot about Antarctic krill. So those are the shrimpies.
Yeah.
Right? Aww. So they're of commercial interest, and they're really important for the food web in Antarctica. And we know that Antarctic krill have been declining for the past 90 years. So there's a correlation between krill declines in Antarctica and sea ice melt.
Oh.
But that's a correlation, and people have been like, well, one's causing the other. Why? But there hasn't been any good evidence of what that connection actually might be. And so there was a study that came out this week by Katrin Schmidt, who's a research scientist at Georgia Tech, and a bunch of other colleagues. And they have kind of helped us piece together a little bit of the effects melting sea ice might have on krill abundances.
Wow.
Which has big impacts for the whole Antarctic food web. And so what they found was that krill that have been caught in ice-related zones, so kind of areas with lots of ice, fed more on this sea ice algae. And we're also much healthier and bigger than krill that were in, like, the open ocean that were feeding on normal algal blooms in the open ocean. Katrin Schmidt suggests that the sea ice actually acts as, like, a protective lid. And so it kind of buffers against high winds and buffers against turbulence and allows these ice algae to photosynthesize a lot more. Okay. Because it's not as turbid and they can kind of stay on the surface and get more light. And so they're actually a much better food source for krill than normal phytoplankton that are like in the open ocean. And so this research that came out this week helps us understand how melting sea ice can impact Arctic ecosystems and impact these krill that are, you know, economically important. So
I love people who do research on climate change,
yeah.
But it must be so
depressing
all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not. Maybe if you're really positive.
Really positive. I had a teacher at Columbia who we took a class that was on something about climate change. And he kept being like, palm trees on the poles. It's going to be great.
Yeah, just like spinning it.
Yeah, like, I don't think that will be great. Also, if there's palm trees on the poles, everywhere else is fucked.
Yeah,
like,
we're
that's
all gone. Yeah, at that point.
Only people are living on the poles if there are palm trees there.
And there's no space for anyone.
Yeah. So that's first Badass of the Week, and that was, I got some of this information from Randall Hyman, wrote an article on Science Magazine. And then the second one is even more out of my comfort zone.
Good. I love it.
Hospitals are dirty.
Oh, yes. Everywhere is dirty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so hospitals aren't really dirty, and it depends where you go. Yeah. But according to the World Health Organization, about 1 in 10 patients worldwide get an infection when they're seeking treatment in a hospital or some other type of healthcare facility because of contaminated hospital surfaces. Ethyl.
Huh?
Ethyl Carantang. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. I apologize, Ethyl.
Speak often.
Yeah. Ethyl Carantang is a chemist at the University College London. And so she, Ethyl, and colleagues have developed a new material that uses ambient light to produce bacteria-killing molecules.
Whoa.
That could help minimize infections that are acquired in hospitals, which even includes drug-resistant bacteria. So essentially it's a self-disinfecting material, which, like, I would like on all of my surfaces.
Yes.
Yeah. Beds you lie in or the stirrups or whatever. I'm just thinking about
this only at the gynecologist.
They only are for the gynecologist.
Those pap smears, those swabs.
That, like,
so
metal.
The clamp.
The cervix clamp. Oh, yeah. Anyways. So yeah, it can be used as like a flexible film or as kind of a harder covering for things. And essentially, you turn on lights, and the polymer disinfects itself.
How did anyone figure this out?
I don't know.
Math.
This is, so they're a chemist. I mean, it could be math. A
chemical engineer, probably, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. I have no idea. But so they've done lab tests using this surface, and this material killed 99.97% of MRSA. Do you know what MRSA is?
MRSA. It's the methyl... Oh, shoot.
It's a strain of Staphylococcus. So it's...
It's methyl something.
It's resistant to methicillin. So it's probably methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus.
Yes, there.
Yeah. So it's one of those really bad...
Yeah, it's like
staph infections.
Superbug.
Yeah, that a lot of our antibiotics doesn't work against.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how do we get rid of gonorrhea? Because that's becoming resistant.
I mean, you just turn the light on. It's gonorrhea.
People are getting it from like surfaces.
All surfaces should be this. All surfaces. What surfaces?
You can make a condom with it.
Yeah, I guess you could make condoms out of them. Maybe. It could be really expensive condoms.
Yeah.
But all you need to do is turn the light on and you can just reuse it. Yeah. Reusable.
I don't think that's only for gonorrhea purposes.
Anyways, so for both experiments, the research
is... Don't reuse condoms, listeners.
No. I mean, unless they're made out of this fancy material.
Yeah.
Researchers use much higher concentrations of microbes than they generally find in, like, hospitals and stuff like that. And it still got rid of, you know, 99.9% of them.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a super cool material that hopefully they could use
amazing.
In hospitals.
Yeah, I think it needs to happen because antibiotics aren't working anymore.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting.
Yeah. So that's... Keep your junk safe.
Keep your junk safe.
Only wear all your clothes made out of these.
Our new segment.
Keep your junk safe. Every week we tell you a new way to keep your junk safe. Yeah, that's all I got. Are you gonna tell me a trivia?
Got some questions that I gotta ask and I'll.
Okay, first we have to answer last week's trivia.
Okay.
So last week's trivia question was, if I'm remembering correctly, who was the first woman to win a Nobel Prize and in what? And it was obviously Marie Curie won a Nobel Prize in physics and then actually again later in chemistry. Okay, are you ready for this week's trivia question?
Once again, no.
Maybe you might know this.
Barack Obama.
Yes! Who is Barack Obama?
The first
Obama?
Woman... I don't know. I got nothing.
So, trivia question.
I'm editing that in.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to also put like a beat down for
it. Yeah, good.
And that's going to be our...
This is going to be a really dumb half-ass. Okay.
Yeah.
So, this week's trivia... What woman inventor... also has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And we'll find out
next week, because I have no idea.
Yeah. Okay, our theme song.
By Artichoke, and it's called Mary Anning. Tweet at us at ecology_gremlin, spelled GREMLYN. Or
at EmmaDietrich89.
We really are disguising ourselves. It's very secretive.
Yeah, whatever. And I think that's it.
Yeah, let us know if you want us to, if you've got current science women that you think should be plugged, if you have old science women that you think should be plugged.
Old? Historical!
Historical. Old science women that we think should be plugged. In our new section,
No. Oh, good.
Yeah, just let us know.
Yeah, just let us know.
Whatever your interpretation of that is, let us know. Oh, and if we've got oopsies, if we need to add things to the oops collection, just let us know.
Yeah,
and we'll do that next
time.
We've
got a new segment.
Oops.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Bye.
Bye.